Welcome to the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. Shaping Portsmouth is a collaboration of key Portsmouth businesses, transforming Portsmouth together.
So we have a very special guest on the podcast today, no stranger to hosting podcasts actually. I'd like to welcome Dave Humphreys to the Shaping Portsmouth podcast.
This is weird, isn't it?
Isn't it weird?
Bit of a reversal.
It is very weird.
Me being interviewed.
How does it feel?
It feels good. It's fine.
Well,
it's not the first time it's happened, actually, that we've done a reverse before on probably the digital program where they interviewed me about that.
Well, you'll be a pro then to me asking you some questions. We just thought it would be a great opportunity. Conference has been and gone. You've had a little bit of downtime, a little bit of a chance to reflect.
Yeah.
So we thought it would be a great opportunity just to sort of take some time out, have a think about last year and just sort of have a check in and see where you're at, where Shaping's at and some thoughts for the future, really.
Yeah.
So tell me then, Dave, when we think about last year, what are you most proud of?
Oh, blimey. So I suppose second year for me in the post.
Yeah.
So the difficult second album.
Okay.
So I suppose when I took over at the conference the first year, I asked everyone to continue leaning in and supporting as they always had done. And then last year, I kind of thanked everyone for doing that, but said, we need you to do more. Mm-hmm. Can you kind of raise it a notch? And I think everyone did. And we had a lot of change, but I think last year, or certainly by the start of last year, people had, they'd got their head around kind of my ethos and where I was going with things. And people did lean in more. And they got more involved and they really got behind what we were doing. And the team really grew. They became more adventurous, did more, pushed the boundaries a bit. And I think our whole delivery really improved last year. And so that's what I'm really proud of. I'm really proud by the way everyone got behind what we were trying to do last year, got involved, did things, but particularly the people closest to the organisation, our partners, our volunteers and the team.
And do you think there's a moment that particularly captured, you know, Shaping spirit, you know, the real essence of what Shaping's about? Is there a moment that stood out for you?
Well, you know the answer to that, surely. It's the conference, isn't it?
Yeah.
I joke that in any other job you get an annual appraisal, whereas I don't. I have to stand on a stage in front of 500 people and kind of demonstrate what I've done and set my plans out for next year, which is a bit more high pressure.
It's a very a public appraisal, really. Yeah.
Exactly. So the conference for me is that moment that captures the spirit. And I think this year, we had the added pressure of being the sort of first big public event in the centenary year after the fireworks launch on New Year's Day. So we had to deliver something that was centenary worthy as well. Mm-hmm. And I think we did that. I think everyone left really feeling connected with Shaping as a brand and what we were about, what we're trying to do. And that's what you want. That's what you want from that event. I think it really encapsulates the whole spirit of us as an organisation, the community that we're trying to create within the city, the good that we're trying to do. And it really gives us an opportunity to not just talk about our programmes, but use the platform of the Guildhall stage to put the people that we're benefiting directly there on the stage in front of everyone.
Yeah.
And it really shows the difference and the importance of it all.
There was such a feeling in the room. There was this real sense of collective pride. I think you definitely rose to the challenge of creating something special in this centenary year. Like there was just there's this term I love. It's called collective effervescence, and it's when people gather en masse and experience like a shared joy together. And I really felt that in the room from everyone that were there, the businesses, from the schools that take part in the Shaped by Solent program. There was just this real collective sense of like the joy and pride of our city. You know, it's my first conference, so you know, it's, you know, that's the one to beat, right? So what's going to happen next year?
Definitely. So if you'd not been to one before, what I'm going to throw this back at you now.
Okay.
Was it what you expected?
I think it exceeded my expectations just because I didn't imagine, I mean, I didn't think I'd cry so many times at a conference, at a business conference, if I'm honest with you. I'm definitely going to bring tissues with me next year because there were so many moments that just this, like the, that sheer joy feeling that I had. Yeah, I didn't quite expect that.
I think that was a new addition.
Okay.
The tearjerk moments. I don't think we really had that the year before.
Okay, right.
I knew that there were a couple of moments that might set people off. And they were probably more obvious than not in the planning. I didn't realise how many there would be and what all of them were going to be.
Yeah.
And made it quite special.
It did. It was really special. And I think, like you say, you should be really proud and the team should be really proud because knowing firsthand, you know, it's a small but mighty team at Shaping and a lot happens and it's a really big event. So I definitely kind of echo your feelings around pride in that. It was really special.
Yeah, definitely. It's something you want to make better each year. And there's a little bit of a story actually behind it because... before last year's conference, quite a way before in the summer, we did a branding exercise with Mindworks Marketing,
okay,
over at their office. And we built this brand wheel for Shaping as a team. It was a collective exercise. And so when we were planning last year's conference, I wanted to keep the foundations of the Shaping Portsmouth conference as it was. Mm-hmm. So people were coming to the event they were expecting to come to, but I wanted to make it more Shaping. And so last year we really lent in to some of the elements of that brand wheel quite intentionally, but I didn't know how well it would land or not. You wonder whether some people would just sit there and say, who is this idiot? What is he doing? And it landed really well. So this year we just pushed them all, another 10%. And again, there were parts of it where I was really wondering, is this even going to work? Have we gone too far here? But clearly not.
No, from the feedback, definitely not. So I'm excited to see what your next conference will hold, Dave. You've touched on the fact that we work with, you know, so many different businesses. We work with different schools. We work with different people across the city. What does collaboration mean in a city like Portsmouth?
So we're recording in the middle of Portsmouth and South Coast Business Week. So Aaron Butson, the legend behind Portsmouth and South Coast Business Week, launched on Monday at the Queen's Hotel.
Okay.
And he took one of my little phrases, which is community over competition or collaboration over competition, and he created a new word.
Right.
Collaboration.
Wow. Okay.
Which I thought was brilliant. So for a city like Portsmouth, what it means is it happens here in a way that it doesn't elsewhere. I think there's a community feel in Portsmouth that is different to any other city. Mm-hmm. It might be island city mentality. It might be because we know where the boundaries are. You know, things emanate from the centre. But like anywhere else where they just then keep going out, in Portsmouth, they kind of hit the coastline and come back again.
Yeah.
So you know where you are. You know your identity. It's, it's all very contained. So I think we collaborate better than anywhere else anyway. And I think that has created a culture of working in partnership and collaboration that just keeps on building and building. But the reality is we are greater together than we are as the sum of our parts.
Yeah.
The impact report that we put out at the conference, we've worked out that for every pound of partnership money, we've delivered £3 in terms of social value across the city.
Amazing.
And that's through collaboration, because if we just, you know, if we didn't have all of that being pulled together, we wouldn't be able to take the advantage of the economy of scale that we can through collaboration. So there's so much more that we can do by collaborating. And, you know, you've now been in the organisation a little while, so you've seen how amazing our partners are and the great things that we can make happen when we want to.
There's just such a willingness. I really feel that, and definitely in the room at conference, but just from anyone that I chat to, any partners that want to come on board, there is this like real willingness to want to kind of collaborate, contribute and work together. Yeah, and like definitely. You say, it's the only way that we can really continue to kind of keep thriving.
Mm. It's the centre of our model.
Yeah.
You know, that's we are not an organisation in and of ourselves. We are a collaboration.
Yeah. It's in the DNA, really, isn't it, of Shaping? No, I feel that. And you also touched on your values and how important it is to have these values within the work that you do. So partnership, inclusion, ambition, trust. I wonder which of these values feels most important right now and why?
That's a difficult one. Obviously, partnership's at the centre of it all. Mm-hmm. It's what makes what we do possible.
Yeah.
So partnership's really, really important. Ambition, we need to be striving to solve the problems that no one else wants to take on. We should be looking for those wicked problems that appear unsolvable, and we should be brave and push ourselves. Trust is at the centre of all of it, you know, everything we do. But that inclusion bit for me at the moment is really important. I think it's been an odd year on that front. Certainly. And we've said this quite publicly, both myself and Andy Grays, on behalf of the Cultural Collective, that both organisations, we get a sense that community cohesion feels like it's going backwards a little bit.
Yeah.
And if you certainly talk to some of those diverse communities, they really feel that. So I think inclusion is definitely the more important one for me at the moment. We've got to make people feel part of our community, feel connected to what we're doing, feel that they can come on board, get involved, but also feel welcome, safe, and at home in our city.
Yeah, I think safety is such a huge thing, isn't it?
It is. You know, and I can talk to my ex-colleagues in the police about things like hate crime figures, which are going down. Which is great. But if people don't feel that, if they don't feel that increase in safety, it doesn't really matter what the figures say.
Yeah, I hear you. And I think it's, you know, in terms of feeling safe in spaces, but also you need to feel safe in order to contribute well, in order to be able to thrive and share your passions and contribute to the city in other ways. So I really hear you on that, Dave. I wonder, is there anything that Shaping are doing to focus on that this year?
Yeah. We've put out a joint statement, if you like, with the Cultural Collective about Portsmouth being an inclusive and welcoming city, and we're really getting behind that. We are doing a bit of work with one of our amazing partners, Talent Included, around what inclusion. It started off actually about, you know, should we create an inclusion charter, but it's kind of grown legs and become something completely different and bigger. And I think it's about probably more of an inclusion toolkit and how we support people to be more inclusive and champion inclusivity. And also, I suppose, recognize the benefits to their own organization and themselves of being more inclusive in their organization and as a city as a whole. But we also, we coordinate the Pride stakeholder group. And we've got some events coming up with the Pride stakeholder group during the year. And we will keep championing that sense of community over people that want to divide us for their own benefits, quite unapologetically.
Yeah, I love that. And the fact that it's a value means that it's kind of like it's in the foundations of shaping. And I'm excited to see kind of the focus on it this year and where that takes us. Thinking about the community and that kind of like that ethos of giving, I suppose, I noticed that there are lots of people that give up their time to either volunteer at shaping, whether it's in the program lead roles or whether it's like non-executive directors, whatever that looks like, there are a lot of people giving a lot of their time. And I wondered personally, what does that mean to you that people give their time for this work?
Well, what was the phrase I used at the conference? We are partner powered, team coordinated, but volunteer enabled. That's our operational model, is how we work. So, partners, really, really important. The financial power that they give us and the backing, it's great. But also a great many of them volunteer as well. The team, love you all, really important people, do an amazing job, every single one of you. But as you've already said, a really small but mighty team.
Yeah.
But it's because we coordinate. We you know, we're not delivering it all on our own, and we couldn't. We would never be able to do it on our own. It's the volunteers that enable everything we do. And whether that's our board of directors and the skills that they bring to us strategically as an organization, our volunteer program leads, many of whom come from our partner businesses and give up their time to coordinate our program delivery with our three pillar leads, or the whole army of volunteers that just turn up and help out when we call on them. All of those people are vital to our delivery. So, you know, we are really, really grateful to them. Someone probably quite famous, but I don't know who, once said, the most valuable thing you have, or the greatest gift you can give, is your time.
Yeah.
You know, and it probably is, you know, time is the thing that's most important to all of us. So to give that away, to help out others, it's a great, great thing. So, yeah, truly grateful to all of our volunteers and the amazing job they do.
Yeah, they're making the magic happen, aren't they?
Absolutely.
I'm just thinking about some of the programs that we have. I was lucky enough to be a Shape by Solent mentor, so I got to experience firsthand, like, that's such a beautiful thing to be part of. And it was a great joy for me to kind of feel that program, not just see it written down on a website or on paper. And I encourage anyone actually who wants to be a Shape by Solent mentor to get in touch with Susan, because it was really special. Thinking about all the different young people that we kind of work with in the city, we've had the apprenticeship bus, which, you know, I'm sure is such an inspiring week for us to focus on apprenticeships. When you look at young people in Portsmouth today, kind of what gives you hope about them?
Do you know what? So I suppose we come back to that inclusion piece a little bit. I think young people are a lot more inclusive than certainly my generation.
Yeah.
Very definitely my father and my grandfather's generations. Mm-hmm. And that gives me hope for a better world, full stop. But I'm really cognizant of some real challenges for young people currently.
Yeah.
You know, we have that COVID generation currently trying to find work, you know, people that probably came through the majority of their secondary school education in the period of or after COVID. And that has had a huge effect on them. We're seeing really big changes in the workplace through pressures on business. We've seen a lot of the lower paid roles become a lot more expensive for employers. And that's through not one single thing, but sort of culmination of a lot of things together. Minimum wage, employers' NI, cost of living and overheads has just made employing young people and starters a lot more expensive.
It's like the perfect storm, really, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. So I think giving opportunity to young people and finding ways of giving opportunity to young people is really, really important. But harking back to my original point, you will find a different way of thinking. You'll find a lot more inclusion in young people. They will bring something to your business, your organization, your community group, your charity, whatever you are, that's very, very different. And in fact, we went on a bit of a journey last summer where, instead of recruiting into a vacancy that had come about, we took two graduates and gave them a temporary job over the summer.
Yeah.
And we really saw the different way of thinking that they both brought to the organisation. And it really kind of transformed a number of things that we were doing.
Great.
For the better. So I would really push that. Give young people opportunities.
Because. And I think you're right. There is a big gap, isn't there, from COVID. And I notice it in some young people that I've worked with or been around. And it's almost like they need that opportunity to get their foot in the door, to get into a role for you to kind of see their unique perspective, but also to kind of like help bridge the gap with some of those skills that they might have been missing.
Totally. And it goes back to that diversity piece in that just because somebody thinks differently to you doesn't mean that they're wrong and that that's wrong. And actually, you know, in some cases, it might well be that you're wrong.
Yeah.
And having a different perspective that challenges that is a good thing. So, don't just assume that all young people are work shy, lazy, don't know what they're talking about, inexperienced, problematic, because they're not. They're just different and their approach is different. Mm. So, you know, why not tap into that?
Yeah, and not to be afraid to kind of learn and to see things from a different perspective in a different way.
Absolutely. I love it. And, you know, it's why we do things like at the conference, bring the youth cabinet on to interview people like our member of parliament and stuff like that, because they give us they ask questions that we probably wouldn't have thought of asking.
Yeah.
And in fact, you know, I had no idea what they were going to come up with. And we got a really interesting, quite personal view of Amanda rather than a political one, because they weren't really bothered about the politics of it. They wanted to know about her as a person.
Which makes it such a more interesting conversation, doesn't it?
Totally. Totally.
I love that. I wonder if there was a wish that you had for kind of young people in the city about their future, what would it be?
That's a tricky one. So I think when we a couple of years ago, we did a Team Portsmouth event and it's about the sort of 2040 vision for the city. What's Portsmouth going to be like in 2040?
Okay.
We made a load of films around six different themes. One of them was economic and I did that little film. And in that film, I spoke about Portsmouth having some of the highest paid workers, but some of the lowest paid residents. Wow. You know, people that are commuting into the city to earn phenomenal amounts of money, but some big areas of deprivation. You know, so you've got some very, very highly paid people working just up the road from places that are in the lowest, you know, the most deprived 10% of the country.
Yeah.
So my wish would be to see those riches translate into those places, and the opportunity that Portsmouth has as a business environment, as a great city to earn, develop, innovate, all translate into those poorer, more deprived areas, and make Portsmouth a really great place for everyone that's here.
It's so true. You said it earlier about being the sum of its parts, you know, and to think about some areas of the city thriving and people thriving next to others that aren't. So I really love that, making sure everyone grows together.
You've always got to think of Portsmouth as an ecosystem and remember that everything affects everything else.
Yeah.
So if we can improve economic prosperity, it should have an impact across the whole city for everyone. But likewise, if we could improve the lives of a few people in the most deprived areas, that will also have an economic plus for the whole city, the whole ecosystem. So we've got to remember that. We've got to remember our most vulnerable people are people that need help, and the people that are just not getting the opportunity, because many of them probably have got an awful lot to give.
Sure. And thinking about like our business community, how can businesses help with that?
So we've been doing a little bit of work recently around our kind of our charity support piece.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been talking a lot about social value and how businesses can connect in and support charities. And we're always encouraging businesses to do that. But within that piece, there's something that we've been talking about. And I will confess that this is not my original thinking at all. I have stolen all of it from Joe at Motivate.
Okay.
Joe Weston McDowell. He calls it the three T's.
Okay.
And this is time, talent, and treasure.
Okay.
As a business, you can give your time, you can help as a trustee, you can volunteer, you can get involved with us, be a program lead, you could get involved with a charity, support them, you can fundraise, this all sorts of things you can do without spending a penny by just giving up a bit of time to help. And maybe coordinating that with your staff or whatever. Then there's talent. There's, you know, your business will be doing something very special and impressive. That's why you've become a business.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, can you use that talent to help local organisations? If I use Rod at Hampshire Flag as a great example, you know, they really do support so many organisations, but a lot of it is done by providing some of what they make for free and helping people out with events, signage and branding and what they're really, really good at.
Yeah.
And then finally, there's treasure.
Treasure, this is exciting. The money.
But it doesn't have to be donations. It could be sponsorship. It could be helping out, you know, that you could find ways that you could make that money work for both of you as a win-win situation. You know, help a charity run an event that might raise them some money by being the main sponsor, or look for opportunities to come in and maybe sponsor something that a charity needs or help them out. Of course, if you have got loads of spare cash kicking around, donations are great.
Yeah.
And they're all tax deductible. So, you know, your 40% of it is money you would have lost to tax anyway. So why not?
Yeah.
I like that. Three T's. It's a good little nugget that Joe gave me.
It is. And something to kind of, for all businesses to think about. Because like you say, you might not have the money, but you might have a skill you can share, or even just your time, like helping those charities feel seen and supported. It's fuel for them. You know, I think back to my Spark days and working with Becky, and how just knowing that you had these people in the community there that saw you and supported you just motivates you to keep going and doing more and helping more people.
Mm. And there's a real problem here, going back to kind of some of the points we were making earlier around if you've got pressure because of cost of living, employer NI, all of that sort of stuff, minimum wage, that hits those charitable organisations particularly hard. But it also hits public sector. And when you've got a dearth of public sector funding, you end up with a lot of vulnerable people that rely on services that are perhaps no longer there, or are underfunded, or are harder to access, which makes the charity and community sector even more of a lifeline.
Yeah.
So we've got to keep them alive. We've got to support those community organisations, those charity organisations that so many people rely on. Because if they go, there's nothing left. There is nothing else. And they are looking after some of our most vulnerable people.
Well, hopefully we can do some more work on that, the community pillar this year and the charity support network.
Very definitely. We certainly will be.
I'll take that as an action point, Dave.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're in the centenary year. I'm going to ask you a personal question now, Dave, because I think the centenary year is all about celebrating the city. I think the conference was such an amazing showcase of our city. I wondered if there's something you'd like to celebrate in yourself.
In myself?
Yeah.
Wow.
I know, right?
Yeah. I think... personally, I've been on a little bit of a journey with the university course.
Okay, yeah.
Still got the dissertation to write from sort of September to next year, but the first qualification, the postgraduate diploma, and the apprenticeship side of it will all be completed this year. So, you know, that's a bit of a celebratory moment, having completed that. I've not been to university before, so it was...
How have you found it?
Really difficult, actually. Okay. I won't pretend it's been a breeze and been easy. It's been a lot harder than I was expecting, but I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's really challenged my thinking. I've learned a lot, which you would kind of hope. And it has been really, really good. So I've really, really enjoyed that. So I think completing that will be a real moment. But also, I think outside of work, and without going too much in depth into my personal life, but both myself and my wife are full-time carers of a learning disabled adult at home who is on his own journey this year. And we've got some big developments with him that have only come about because of all the hard work that's been put in previous years, particularly by my wife. So I think that is a bit of a moment.
Yeah.
And I think it will certainly be a life-changing year for all of us. In
Amazing.
That respect, and will enable us to do some things together, my wife and I, that we've not been able to do before in certain ways, and have time to ourselves and have a bit of flexibility. So that is going to be definitely going to be a celebration. It's a very daunting one as well, but a big moment. And then I think there are some changes happening within the team.
Yeah.
You know, everyone now knows that CP's coming in to join us imminently.
Not too much longer, right?
Yeah, yeah. We originally brought you in temporarily, and we're now not letting you go. The escape route has been blocked.
Okay.
Quite happy with that. And we know we've got some other changes coming. And in fact, there's still two vacancies we're currently trying to recruit into. So
yes.
We know we're going to have some new faces, lots of new faces in the team. And I think, again, for me, it's that realization of the vision originally and where I wanted to take Shaping to, that you know, I'm the right people are in the right posts doing the right stuff now, and it's
getting
all starting
closer
to
it.
Yeah. And that in turn gives me a lot of time and capacity back, which is just nice.
Yeah.
We were talking about it earlier, just like having a bit of downtime in the diary when I'm not working, which makes a change. But just seeing other people being able to pick stuff up and own it enjoy delivering it themselves would be great.
It's a big year for the city, big year for you personally, yeah. It sounds like lots of changes. But I asked that question about celebration because I think we're always striving for something and we don't often take the time to reflect backwards. So thank you for your generosity in sharing, because it isn't always easy to say something good about yourself.
It's funny because I suppose a lot of what I was saying there links to time.
Yes.
And the value of that. And,
yes.
Just getting that back.
Getting the balance.
Yeah.
And also, I know as someone who manages your diary, I know how many meetings you've had since I've joined. So I think about that across a whole year and the kind of weight of that. So it has been nice to see a few gaps pop up for you to actually take some time back. And it's so important to keep yourself topped up, right? Because
definitely.
You feeling topped up means you're better at work, better at home, everything. You can give yourself more fully, I guess.
Yeah, definitely.
I wondered, so you said at the start, so this 2 years in the role, what has the role taught you about yourself?
When I first got this post, I had a real sense of imposter syndrome. I was really surprised that I got it, if I'm being really honest.
Okay.
I came out of the public sector and out of policing. I've done a little bit of charity work. And all of a sudden, I'm sort of sat in a room with sort of small businesses coming through the door asking me for advice. And this can't be right. why are you asking me? But there were a lot of people across the city doing amazing things. And I'd worked in the city previously and knew a few people from my policing days, but a lot of them had moved on and gone. And I kind of felt that I didn't know a lot of people. I was a bit out of my depth. Imposter syndrome in a big way.
Okay.
And thinking, how am I going to, you know, I've managed to blag my way to getting this job. How am I now going to deliver everything I need to deliver here? And I suppose the point to your question is transferable skill. I probably didn't recognize some of the skills that I brought from the world of policing and leadership in policing, how very aligned to the world of business they were.
Yeah.
And how I was in effect sort of in a business position in policing and actually everything I did there, I could absolutely map to this environment and use it.
And I will say, I've never seen a man write down so little or remember so much. That must be a skill from your policing days, surely.
Oh, I don't know, actually. My memory's awful.
No, honestly, I'm like, how's he remembered any of this? He's not even making any notes. And then you'll just like repeat it back to me at a later date.
Oh,
yeah.
I don't know. It doesn't feel like that.
Okay.
So there you go. And I suppose that's the point, because sometimes, you know, you underestimate yourself. So
yes.
I might not see it in that way.
Yeah.
But yeah, that transferable piece. It was funny. There was someone earlier in the week who we were all in a queue and they suddenly introduced themselves to each other. And I was like, oh my God, I didn't realize you didn't know each other. And one of them turned around and said, yeah, but it's because you know everyone, Dave. And I think you know, 2 years ago, I was sat having a conversation with Steve Pitt, and he was asking me, you know, what are your concerns? I was like, I don't know anyone in the city really.
Mm.
And he said to me, oh, don't worry about that. Yeah, that'll solve itself really quickly.
Yeah.
And I'll just make a point of any time we are in the same place of just introducing you to everyone I can, which he did, true to his word. And in fact, the very next week from that conversation was the first Portsmouth and South Coast Business Week that I went
okay.
to. And in his intro speech, he introduced me to the room.
So oh, wow. Thing.
So he kept his word.
Everyone knew you yeah. from that point.
Yeah. And so I got to know everyone really, really quickly. So the thing that kind of worried me most turned out to be, you know.
Yeah, the smallest part of it.
The smallest part of it. Yeah. Yeah. So. It's been an interesting journey, definitely.
Well, I'm excited to see where it leads this year, Dave. I wondered, as we wrap up this special edition of the podcast, could you describe or give me one word that best, like, encapsulates Portsmouth as a city?
Well,
I think I know what you might say.
You know exactly where I'm going to go, because we started the conference with it. The slide that I stole from Portsmouth Creates.
Yeah.
But something that I'd spent 2 years banging on about anyway. And then they just did a survey of three words that sum up Portsmouth. And the one overriding word is community.
Yeah.
And it's, I've got to go with that. That's what we're about. We're about community. Shaping Portsmouth is a community. Portsmouth itself is a community. Our business community is a community.
Yeah.
There are so many communities within the community as a whole. I think going back to the collaboration conversation, I think community stems from that island mentality as well. And I think for Portsmouth, it's our superpower. I think it's the yeah. one thing that really sets the city apart and makes a lot of things really possible, that people really do feel connected and part of that community.
The city makes anything feel possible, really.
It does.
You know, if you have a business idea, you can basically make it happen, and there's so many people that are there to, like, help you, support you, ask questions. It does make it a really special place.
Yeah, in fact, you just reminded me there about, so last week I spoke at the Portsmouth City Council networking event, and I was talking about Portsmouth Business Leaders Forum, which is coming up on Thursday the 16th of April at the Royal Maritime Hotel. For anyone that would like to join us,
nice.
Please get in touch. But I was talking about why Portsmouth is such a good place to do business. And I went a very long way around explaining it through our whole history of fighting with the French. But what many people don't realise is that the world's first automated mass production line was in Portsmouth.
Wow.
In 1805, the block mills in the dockyard, the first automated machinery to make identical pulley blocks for the Royal Navy.
Wow.
And so that just shows you what an innovative place
yeah.
Portsmouth is. The world's
spirit
first
of the place.
Mass production line, the heart of innovation.
Wow.
Globally.
Maybe that's just why we have this kind of culture
yeah.
for business and for people, you know, following their business dreams, yeah. whatever they are. Right. Well, thank you for that, Dave. I wonder if, you know, I'm big on gratitude, so I'm going to ask you a question about that. Can you tell me one thing that you feel grateful to the city for?
To the city for?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Or it could be a person that you feel grateful to.
No. I suppose the city kind of, it gave me a career. I come from Salisbury.
Mm-hmm.
I joined the police. A story that I won't tell now, but I have on other podcasts about getting posted to Portsmouth as probably the then chief constable playing a practical joke on me.
Okay.
So I ended up in Portsmouth, got off the train at Fratton, sort of walked up to Kingston Police Station, for Kingston Crescent Police Station for the first time, thinking, oh my God, what have I done?
Mm-hmm.
Where am I? This place is not like where I've just come from at
yep.
all. And it, for 30 years, it gave me a career, but it's, you know, also given me a family,
mm-hmm.
My home. It's given me everything. So, yeah, that's what I'm grateful to the city for.
You were posted here.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Loved every minute of it.
I love that. And is there, we've spoken a bit about celebrating yourself, but is there anything that you're excited about that's coming up this year that you want to shout out, mention, celebrate in some way?
So much, probably. I think the centenary.
Yeah.
And just how... how everyone leans into that together, and some of the events that are taking place solely because of the centenary. You know, the Lion's Trail I'm really looking forward to, and the work that we've got going on with Seekers Creates, Spark.
Yes.
And some of the amazing business sponsors such as HFC, Citrus, etc., that have come on board with that. So I'm looking forward to all of that stuff. But I'm also really looking forward to some of the events that happen every year, to see how they lean into the centenary.
Yeah, how they turn things up.
Yeah. We've kind of set the tone. And yes. So, you know.
No pressure for the rest of the event.
Yeah, there's lots of things that go on through the year. And
It's like a golden thread, isn't it? Just kind of weaving its way through this year. And I know I've mentioned celebration a lot. It feels like a very celebratory year, but I don't think we always do that enough. So it's a great opportunity for us to kind of look back and to celebrate, and coming together in a joyful way in these events is going to only connect the city in a deeper way.
Totally. Totally.
Well, thank you, Dave. I hope that wasn't too painful.
It wasn't. But you know what we've got to do to finish the podcast?
Remind me.
We've got to have a recommendation.
Oh, yeah, the recommendation, yes.
Somewhere to go or something to do.
Yes.
So which means, because I can also turn that around and ask you what yours would be.
I wasn't prepared for any questions.
Well, I haven't prepared for it.
Okay.
I know what I'm going to go for, actually. I'm going to go for the whole historic quarter.
Oh, okay.
Portsmouth Historic Quarter.
Nice.
Not just because Portsmouth Historic Quarter are going to be our Shaped by Solent sponsoring business setting the challenge this year.
Okay.
But it's just a great place. And I'd highly recommend anyone that lives locally getting a season ticket and going in there more often. I love my photography.
Yeah.
And one of my favourite photographic exhibitions, the She Sees exhibition, is in Boathouse 4.
Okay.
There's some amazing modern portrait photography of women connected with maritime currently. But there's also a whole wall of kind of wartime women, photographs of women during the war. And that's really, really good and quite relevant as we approach International Women's Day.
Yes.
But there are so many other things. Like the Mary Rose Museum, one of my absolute favourites. And the ship's great, but actually the whole insight into Tudor life. I just love the Mary Rose Museum. I really, really do. And I love HMS Victory.
Yeah.
I remember it from a child and going on there. It's kind of my first connection with the city. And although it's being restored, once you're in and on the ship, it's still amazing inside. But also there's the little things, like people forget that if you've got that pass, you can get on the harbour tour boat from inside the historic quarter.
Of course, yeah.
And you can get a whole little tour of the naval dockyard and the harbour, which is just brilliant to do on a nice sunny day. And you've got all the other little boats down there behind Boathouse 4 on the pontoon. So that's my recommendation. Get yourself down to Portsmouth Historic Quarter.
Okay, I'm going to take your advice with that and make sure I check it out. I'm still thinking about a place, and I'm in a bit of a tree era. I'm very comforted by nature at the moment.
Right, okay.
And I love a well-established tree. And I have to say that walking from the ferry, Gosport Ferry, to the Guildhall, sometimes I go via Victoria Park. That's got some banging trees in there. That kind of just gives me a really kind of grounded, like, it's a nourishing vibe. If you just walk through there, sit down there on a bench, have a look at the trees, it's a really cool park. So it's I'm going to go with that.
It's a bit of a hidden gem, isn't
it? It is.
Victoria Park. People forget about it.
Yeah.
But you go through that little tunnel by the War Memorial from our offices and it's just there in front of you, suddenly the peace and tranquility of the park.
Exactly. So don't forget about Victoria Park.
Yeah. Nice.
There we go.
Excellent.
Well, thank you, Dave, for your time
and for answering
my questions. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as I have.
I have indeed. Thank you, Charlotte.
Thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by Shaping Portsmouth, working to make Portsmouth the number one UK city in which to invest, live, learn, work and visit. To find out more, please visit shapingportsmouth.co.uk. This podcast was supported by Spark Community Space and Portsmouth Community Lottery.